Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Paul McGuire and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Simultaneously broadcasting from Alabama and Texas, here are your hosts, Paul and Trey.
Well, welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide to take you deeper into your parenting. The date today is Friday, July the 27th. 2012. We are here with my good friend Paul from theaffluentstudent.com. Paul, how are you, man?
Trey, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
It was a really, really good weekend in a lot of ways, although it just dawned on me it really didn't end all that well because my kids all got sick.
Oh, did they really?
They really did.
Just the crud, a stomach thing? What you got there?
I have absolutely no idea how to classify this. They're all running they're all running fevers of over 100, so low, you know, pretty high-grade fevers. And wow. My daughter, I mean, I guess it's just kind of the way their physiology is reacting to it. You know, my littlest daughter's coughing because of it. My oldest daughter is throwing up because of it. And my son's little, dadgum, his tonsils, man, they closed up so much we couldn't even see his uvula. I mean, it was one of those, we were checking it just to make sure we weren't going to have breathing problems. So
sure.
Anyway, it was kind of spooky, but it wasn't bad. Everything's fine. Nobody's moving around much today. My wife texted a little bit earlier and showed they were all laying on the couch, which is odd for my kids, but...
Oh,
but
I bet.
Other than that, though, it really was actually a very good weekend.
That's good. That's good. We had vacation last week and came back from the Orlando area. We went down to Disney this time, but it was different for us because we actually went down to do the water parks. And I tell you, if for any of the folks that have done that, I think the vast majority of people that go down to Orlando go for the purpose of going into the Disney theme parks, but the two water parks that they have down there, they're called Blizzard Beach and Typhoon Lagoon. Man, those are some really good parks if you're into the water park thing.
Good old water parks. You know, my kids love water parks, but I've never been a water park fan. I just,
really?
I've never been a strong swimmer. I can swim, but I don't swim well. And so I've always been like resistant to the water parks. So
yeah, sure.
My kids but hate that. They hate it. Come on!
I want to drag you right in there. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We left on Saturday, actually got back Thursday evening. We drove and with my 9-year-old, my 17-year-old, and I tell you, it was probably one of the best traveled trips that we had as a family. Everybody, you know, traveled well together. We didn't have any issues. You know, it was just a real good time. So I'm back in the saddle here, back at work this week, and we're ready to go.
You know, my father-in-law left my wife with one tidbit of just a pretty incredible piece of advice, but he always told her, like, it was actually about us when we were dating. You know, she was talking with him, and he gave her the advice. He said, you know, listen, have you gone on a road trip with him yet? And she was like, well, no, I haven't. And I think at the time she had, and she goes, well, that's the way you can tell. She goes, if you can go on a road trip with somebody for over a few hours, and you can come back, and you still want to be in a relationship with them, they're a keeper. And I think it goes the same thing for kids. I always tell parents. They said, well, we think we're doing pretty good. And I said, are you ready for the litmus test? I'm like, yeah. Okay, take a long road trip somewhere and see what happens.
Indeed.
All right. So let's grab this up here. What are our topics for today, Paul?
Trey, I think we want to talk on a couple of different things. One's going to be a little more somber. We want to spend a few minutes talking about the horrific crime that happened out in Colorado this weekend with the Dark Knight opening on early Friday morning, and the shooting that took the lives of, I think at last count, there was 12 people. Just a sad, sad, unfortunate incident. And then I think we're going to go a little more lighthearted and talk about one of the things you mentioned last time around was that you and your wife had actually gotten through paying off all your debts and had gotten to the point of debt freedom. And we're going to talk about that a little bit because I think we're both kind of Dave Ramsey nuts here and follow the same philosophy. And I think it would be kind of encouraging for folks to hear that, yes, indeed, if you do have kids in your household, you can get to that point of debt freedom. So maybe some encouragement and some real life testimony there as to how it might work out. So with that, Trey, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, we're going to lead off with this whole thing that's in the Colorado shooting. I wanted to give a disclaimer to everybody. And Paul and I talked about this in advance. We want to make sure that we know we're going to do things like we are very specifically not going to use the name of this guy who did the shooting. The reason for that is it's not out of spitefulness or out of hurtfulness, but we have made a choice that we are not going to honor anything about what happened that he did out of all of this. Again, this is not to be spiteful or hurtful, but this is choosing to honor those whose journey to healing is going to start as of this week. And so we're not going to go through that. We're not wanting to turn this into like shock jock journalism out of all of this. But we did want to hit this from a perspective that I think a lot of parents, I think subconsciously, deep down inside, we want to know, what do we do to prevent this? Was it something that happened? We want to know what causes this. And we also, I think a lot of parents want to know, is there something that I'm doing? Could I have this? Because so many of the parents, when you take their responses afterwards, are almost shocked that it could happen. Especially from, I mean, this kid was getting his doctorate, wasn't he? If I remember this, reading the story correctly, I mean, this kid was getting his doctorate, right, Paul?
That's right. He had just finished, I think, his first year of graduate school, was an honor student throughout. So, you know, this is not one of the kids that you would think about as, you know, at least on the surface there, as a troubled youth and as somebody who might have inclinations to do something this horrific. So
we wanted to take a time just real quick and briefly to talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on here. What is this that we're seeing here? You know, and I'll be honest, the level of devastation that this involves is something that's tough. You know, I've tried to imagine, what if it were my kids that were in that theater? And then I'll be honest, Paul, and this is the perspective that was, I'll be straight with you, it was kind of uncomfortable to take this approach. But what if it was my kids? And this may sound sadistic, but what if it was my kids doing the shooting? You know, I meant to look this up, and I got so dug in deep as I was researching this. I meant to go look up. There was a movie that was done. Paul, do you remember what it was? There was a movie done that was specifically focused on the two parents of a kid who went on a shooting spree in a college, and then it was kind of the after effects. Have you ever seen that movie?
I did not. I think I vaguely remember the movie, but I did not see it either. And that's a very good point. You know, what do you? As a parent, you have to feel for them at this point, because this kid was, I think he was, you know, he was in his early 20s, and so he, being in graduate school, he had moved outside of his parents' homes and so forth, and, you know, in all, probably with all indications, they had this kid off on the right path. So, you know, nothing to really disparage these parents or anything like that, because, you know, by all intents and purposes, they had raised this kid and had him off and running on his own. And you just have to feel for them and wonder what's going through their minds right now. So that movie you're talking about, I may need to look that up.
It's Beautiful Boy. It was done in 2011, and I highly recommend people go see that book. I mean, see that movie. It was fantastically well acted. It gave a whole other perspective on this. Truthfully, there is a point at this section. I do feel like the attention needs to be on those that lost and who had kiddos that were injured because of that. But anyway, just an interesting perspective. All of this comes out of my thought about what this was. So I want to recap a little bit about some of the stories and some of the statements that have been released by the police. So kind of what causes this? And so you guys know, in a past life, I was a psychologist and a therapist. And so I started kind of researching into some of what was said. One of the things that caught my attention the quickest was that he frequently was referring to himself to the police as the Joker. I don't know if anybody has seen, Paul, have you seen like The Dark Knight, etc.? I think it was the Joker played by, what was his name? Heath Ledger?
It's Heath Ledger.
Yes. Right. Fantastically and amazingly well acted.
Very well acted.
Anyway, he was kind of pushing and preparing himself to be the Joker. And so, you know, I went through the traditional stuff, just like, you know, is this antisocial personality based off of everything that I've seen for this kid? No, it wouldn't be that. Interestingly enough, and I want to make sure I'm very clear to people, I do not have a degree in diagnosis. Please do not listen to anything that I'm saying and say, oh, this psychop, that is not what I do, and this is not my diagnosis. But as I was going through this, what caught me was what is actually called sadistic personality disorder. Now, I want to be very clear. In the psychologist's Bible, it's called the DSM-4R. And the DSM-4R is the most current one that we're using right now. This is no longer in there. Sadistic personality disorder is no longer in there. They typically define stuff like this as personality disorder not otherwise specified. Listen to this. It's really interesting. The reason why this was taken out of the DSM was, number one, so few people have done it that they didn't feel like they could justify it being a diagnosis. Second off, they did it for political reasons, because statistically, sadistic personalities are more often male And they were afraid that if they allowed this diagnosis to slip in there, that it might kind of have that backfire effect of legally, like, being able to excuse cruel behavior. So this was actually pulled out. But what you're looking at when you talk about sadism is basically just callous, super vicious, manipulative behavior towards other people. And I'm not going to go through all of this with you guys because most of y'all don't really want to know all of that. So I think the question comes down to is what do we do to prevent something like this from ever happening? And I'm going to share my side of this, and Paul's got his side of it as well. And I think we agree. Don't mishear that to the folks listening. But number one that I would say is make sure that you are teaching your kids about what is right and what is wrong. Think about the Joker's personality, Paul. I mean, what did he love to do? He loved to use fear and intimidation. Yeah. And he liked to scare people and bully people and push people around. And that, I mean, that was his character. And it made him have a sense of power. And I personally think, and again, I'm not a professional trying to make this diagnosis, but I think that's what this was all about for him. It was about gaining some level of power. And the Joker's character, I mean, he was typically depicted as kind of funny and humorous, but at the same time being absolutely evil. And so I think in a lot of ways, this was this kid trying to gain some level of power. And so one of the things I recommend that we talk to our kids about, teach your kids about what is right and what is wrong, ingrain in them, starting from little bitty two-year-old babies, when the first thing that they can start understanding, teach them how not to try to take power from people, but teach them how to give them power. And
that's good, Trey. Yeah, I like that. And, you know, something else about this that everybody's, you know, part of why we're not using this guy's name is because, you know, there's probably a degree that this guy's trying to seek some fame and some notoriety. Yes. And things like that. And I think, you know, another thing that we can work on and teach our kids too is this spirit of humility.
Yeah,
you know,
that's good.
The idea that you don't always have to be at the forefront, mm-hmm. in the limelight. You don't have to have this 5 minutes of fame. If you will do, you know, it's excellence in the ordinary. If you do the little things good, then, you know, then altogether the package turns out to, you'll get your greatness and you'll get your, you know, rewards and your comeuppance and things like that. But to seek, you know, humility or to seek glory and to have to engage yourself into some situation that, you know, I'm going to make sure these people really remember me by what I do. You just got to teach your kids that
that's good.
You know, the problems behind that and what comes with it, too.
You know, it's so funny that it almost seems to be a paradox in and of itself. But, you know, that's the last year. You know, one of the byproducts of me is that, you know, growing up, there was always that attempt to want to let low self-esteem guide decisions. Well, then you mix in things like a degree, and it's really easy for people, and I raise my hand at this, when you come out of, like, things of having a master's degree in something to wanting to allow arrogance and pride to step in. And right. What I have found was that the harder that I tried to practice, hey, look what all I know, blah, 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 the more difficult it was for me, the harder it became for me to get there. And you know, as I've put together my business model for Family Podcast Network, Paul, I have a dry erase board that I have about four statements on there that are in permanent ink, so they'll never come off. And the very bottom one was the last one that I added, and I think we may have talked about this, but I put on there that humility before honor. And I have found that the more that I have humbled myself, the more that I have opened myself up to my failures on my podcast, the more that I have admitted that I don't know what I'm doing here, the more that I have been honest and practiced humility, the more that I'll watch my podcast numbers jump higher and higher and double and triple. And there's a fundamental piece to that, and I'm so glad you brought that up, that whenever we practice humility, honor, that's when you experience true honor.
That's true. That's right. Going on those lines, you know, to break it down a little bit more, I've got 46 years on this planet, and I'll tell you what, Trey, I figured out that there is more every day that I don't know. Yeah. And I had that problem back. I spent 9 years in the Coast Guard, and when I first got out of the Coast Guard, the Coast Guard was my first real full-time job as an adult. And I got out, I think I was around 30 or 31 years old. And the first job that I got, one of the first jobs I got, you know, I just didn't see eye to eye with my manager. And when I felt like I had enough, I took it upon myself to go to his manager and tell him what I thought of that manager, you know, and to foist my own opinions and my greatness there as to, you know, why I would be a better person to be in that position. And I'm going to tell you something, that is a place where I learned in my life a dose of humility very quickly. That department manager at that time took me aside, and, you know, at the time my feelings were hurt, but, you know, looking back, he handled it very well. You know, he basically pulled me aside and said, you know what, when you question things like that, you're questioning my decisions and my authority and things like that too, and I'm not going to have it. And he physically moved me out of the group that I was in and isolated me. I worked in an office space at that time, and he moved me to a row of cubicles that was vacant. It was totally vacant. I didn't have people on either side of me. I didn't have people across from me, and I learned some humility.
Sure.
You know, and I learned that, you know what, you know, Mustang there, you don't have it all figured out. You know, yeah. you got to figure out that this is a something that you're growing in, that people make mistakes and that everybody's not perfect. And you're going to have to figure out that it's going to happen to you, too, someday. Mm. And it has. And the more I do that, the more, just like you said, the more you figure out that. In some way, in some weird way, it actually works itself out so that when you wear your shortcomings and your failures on your sleeve, that people gravitate to that because people want to learn from the errors of others. So,
you know, and I want to issue kind of a segue here too. Paul and I are most certainly not blaming the parents here. This young man still is that last part of that, those two words. He was a man now. And there reaches a point to where everybody has to make that decision for themselves, what they're going to become and what they're going to do. And so I want to make sure that I'm clear. We're not trying to finger out the parents and say, oh, this is their fault. If they just would have, that's not the purpose here. He was a full-grown adult. He was making his choices.
Yes.
When we're saying these things, we're talking about taking advantage of that time to influence our kids when they're young, and things can become that habit. Do kids have to have parents get that figured out to become, you know, good, upstanding citizens from their parents when they're little? Absolutely not. There's plenty of kids that there's even a whole section of psychology dedicated to understanding what they call the mold breaking phenomenon. Those kids, sure, that just come out of the rough part of town, the ghettos,
against all
whatever,
odds, right?
And yes, against all odds, they break it and they become CEOs of major corporations. They're out there and they can do that, and it is that person's responsibility. And once they hit that age where it's time for them to make their decisions, where they can do that. So this is not about implicating them, but it is about making sure that you – I have a whole episode at FPN about carpe diem parenting, about seizing today. Seizing, right, today is that opportunity to teach and to train your kids in what they need to know and what they understand. Teaching, like Paul brought up, fantastic point, Paul, about humility and understanding that you do not have to be out in front of everybody to be somebody. About teaching what is right and what is wrong. How do we teach people? How do you really gain power? It's not by bullying and using fear and terror. That gains you nothing except fear and terror. How do you really influence people? In our family, we teach that you care about them, because people, and this is kind of our ethos in our family, is people don't give a crap what you know and what you want them to do until they know that you care about them.
That's,
and
right,
actually, I think you actually brought that up in a previous episode, and that's been a longstanding one of ours, and I love that.
Yeah.
Teaching these things while they're young. And again, you got to turn them loose. You got to allow them to make their own decisions one of these days. I pray to God, literally, I pray that that's not the decision that somebody makes. But start teaching your kids while they're young, even if you think they're not really going to understand. First off, you got to spend time around your kids, because if you're not around them, you don't get these little opportunities to say, my daughter, oldest daughter, Anna, hey, Anna, did you know that we never do this? You know, we had a situation, Paul, over the weekend, that we were sitting there with our daughter, my daughter and son, and we'd gotten all three kids in the bath, and we'd bathed them, and we'd gotten them out of the bath, and my wife and I had walked in the back to go get some fresh clothes out and whatnot, and all of a sudden I heard my wife just getting real upset, and I poked my head in there, and what had happened was my daughter Anna had grabbed the first towel that she could find, and she'd wrapped it over her shoulders, and the other one had fallen on the ground and had gotten some water on it. Well, my son got out of the bathtub too, and he was just freezing because it was really cold in there. We're big time. We're like polar bears when it comes to the temperature in our house. So it was really cold, and the little guy was just sitting there shaking. And so my son was trying to reach down to grab this towel. Retrospectively, I think she was trying to keep him from getting that. But he said, "Anna, could you please move?" And instead of getting off for him, she just very defiantly stepped on that little towel and just was like, "No, you can't get on there." And so it's light and it's small. But that was, in its fullest sense, bullying.
Yeah,
and
really is.
My wife and I had to respond very appropriately to it. You know, we had to sit down and talk to her about what bullying is, how this is not okay. And my six-year-old was like, "You know what? Whenever so-and-so at church the other day was doing this, they were bullying, weren't they?" And she was this is 6 years old, man. She was putting this together.
Getting it. Yeah.
But taking that time to teach our kids, because that is the definition of bullying. I did a whole segment on bullying just recently, and I learned a lot of stuff I had no clue about. But the definition of bullying is when somebody tries to use things like fear to gain power over somebody else.
That's right.
And that's exactly what this situation was in California, was a man trying to gain power. I mean, I can't see any other reason. I don't see any spiritual reason. I didn't see any religious affiliation, terrorism, anything like that. This just seemed to be old-fashioned, I'm going to gain power. And I wonder, again, now that you brought it up, if it was also popularity too. So,
yep, absolutely. You know, what you're talking about there, Trey, is just using those teachable moments. You know, they happen every day around us. And
agreed.
There's – you know, the intentional parent will take those situations and they will bring it down to a language level that's appropriate for their child, and they'll have these discussions with them. Instead of just telling them not to do something, you know, they'll talk to them about why not, and get your kids to understand how, you know, those can have long-term implications and, you know, far-reaching impacts later on in life. So I think you're right. I think, you know, being able to have those discussions with your kids and carpe diem parenting, you know, not letting that slip by, because I mean, you and I know, you know, the more current a situation is, the more fresh it is on your mind, the more of an impact it makes. And you know, you can't come back 2 weeks later and say, "Remember when?" You know, kids have moved on by then, and you know, quite frankly, so have parents as well. So, and, you know, all your feelings, all your emotions are fresh at the time of the event. So, you know, it's easier, I think, you know, to articulate yourself and really get your point across if you'll take the time to teach your kids with that intentionality.
No, I think that's good. I think that's super good. Well worded, well wrapped up. Paul, anything else we need to go over on this particular story?
All I want to say is that I know from my heart, and I'm sure for yours too, you know, it just our sympathies, our deepest condolences go to the folks and those families, the ones that are affected, and to that community as well too. I'm sure that, you know, as a small town, you know, I say small, you know, 300,000 people, but, you know, that's, you know, honestly, that's a small community, and it made worldwide news, you know, and I just know that those folks out there are hurting, and so our thoughts and our prayers go out to them, and we just hope for healing and for you know, for swift and quick justice on the perpetrator for this crime.
Absolutely agreed. You know, I was also thinking too. This was I was thinking about the life lessons we pull out of this that we can teach our kids, and you know, I was thinking this could also be a good opportunity. I don't think my daughter's quite ready to talk about this yet. She's six, and there's something in me that doesn't feel comfortable about it. But I was thinking, what if she was another 4, maybe 5 years old, or maybe a little bit younger? I mean, she'll ask questions, I think, when she's ready. You know, this is also a good place to talk about the ultimate forgiveness. You know, with my spiritual beliefs, and I, Paul, I think yours are probably the same, but with my spiritual beliefs, we believe in forgiveness too. And I think this would be a good topic to talk with your kids about too. What do you think? Should this person be forgiven, or is taking the life of somebody else unforgivable? I don't know. Something to chew on. I haven't really put a whole lot of thought into that. And I was just you said something that made me think about that a minute ago.
Yep, I hear you. Well, Trey, let's move over into our next topic here. I don't think on the last episode, but I think 2 episodes ago, you mentioned that you and your family, you and your wife, have paid off a ton of debt and actually gotten to the point of debt freedom. So, you know, number one, again, I want to congratulate you
on
that.
You.
I know that's a big deal. Without going into numbers or with going as far as you'd like to go with it, Trey, why don't you give a little background, set up, you know, what made up the debt, you know, how long you guys went through this process, and just how you got here.
Absolutely. I'll start it back. I'll go through kind of the pre-stuff. I got zero education from my parents on financial stuff. The only thing that really I can remember about finances as a kid was briefly, I remember a couple of times my parents really nervous about being able to pay bills and my mom going on like a, you know, if I didn't turn the light off, she's going to punch me in the face, you know, kind of stance. No, I mean that metaphorically, but yeah. I remember a few of those. And then I remember my parents encouraging me to get a checking account. No education on how to do it or how to run it. I went overdrawn on a couple of checks. Yep. Felt like the world fell apart and I closed out my account because I was terrified of it. So then nothing. All the way up through into college, I stayed in the dorm those first years. So absolutely nothing. Married my wife. And my wife and I, we got credit cards. Of course, we were brand new into it. So all the credit cards are like, yeah, you got some jobs. This is good. And we got credit cards. I think between the two of us, we had a total of 10 credit cards. Everything from American Expresses all the way to Visas and MasterCards. We began to live within a set of means that we could not. I justified it because I bought very few things on a regular basis, then I would justify big expenses and purchases and whatnot. My wife would justify it by saying she's not buying things for herself. She's buying things like groceries with it. She's buying things for the kids. She's buying gifts. You and I talked a little bit about doing the five love languages here pretty soon. I'm a gifts person. I love getting gifts from people. And so she would buy little gifts and things like that. So she would justify it. And I have no problems confessing to it. We got up to, this is excluding any school debt, we got up to, I think, $32,000 or $33,000 worth of credit card debt between those three. That was, depending on when you look at my life, that was almost a full year's salary. We did at least a third of the $30,000 that we got up to in less than a year for each one.
Wow.
And, I mean, we were swiping that card, buying stuff on Amazon, buying guitars. I was in a worship band at the time. We were buying guitars with it, you know. I mean, we just racked it up really, really fast. We and I do have my wife to share some of these stories. We got into some situations with, we finally started feeling some conviction on it, and there was some sneak buying that was happening on both of our parts, just some open, blatant, we were so, I don't want to say that it was sick, Paul, but I want to say it was so malnourished in those areas and understanding that we didn't have a clue what we were doing. My brother-in-law, actually, his name's Gary, he got into this Ramsey guy, and I heard a little bit about Ramsey, and I started looking around on him a little bit, and I started looking around on a thing called Crown Financial. Mm-hmm. We're not strict adherent to the quote unquote Ramsey plan or the Crown Financial, but what kind of happened was, and I'm going to get, you know, typically I try to hit light on the spiritual parts of this. I'm going to kind of delve into a little bit of my spiritual beliefs too. We started kind of receiving some convictions about the money that we were spending and whatnot. And so we sat down and we started talking and say, listen, we've got to start redoing what we're doing here. We're spending money out the wazoo. This is not okay. My wife and I had some very healing moments that occurred through some pretty long, we're talking like 5-6 hour long chats that we had that just were really, you know, restructuring our model. I'm going to condense down about 3 years of just high intensity, a lot of stuff going on. We stumbled across a guy a few years ago, and his name was Jack Spirko, and I listened to one of his podcasts, but he had a mentality that went like this. He said, before you buy anything, take this approach. First off, ask yourself, do you really need it? I mean, like, do you really need this right now? Is, you know, can you put it off? Can you wait till later till you can get it? Second off, is there anything else in your life that can perform the function? So the idea being is that, like, if you have a water hose and now you want to, you know, that got cut or something by the lawnmower, and you need to get it working again, right? And so most in this consumerism model, it's what do you do with that water hose?
It's throwaway.
Throw it away, right? And then you go buy another one, right? So is there something else that can perform that function? And that can be multiple things. Do you have another water hose if it's destroyed? Or can you just run down to the hardware store and buy one of those little couplers and then, you know, slice it up and then put it back together and you've got a working hose again, right? So that was another piece of that mentality. And then third, and this has been the most revolutionary one for us, can we afford to do it in cash right now? And then if you can't, don't do it. Don't do it. Absolutely. Stay away from anything in credit if you don't have it in the bank account right now. There was my wife and I still joke to this day about, did you ever see the Saturday Night Live skit, Paul, that was like, if you don't have this, they're talking about this new revolutionary financial perspective, and it's called, if you don't have the money, don't buy it. It was that. So once, you know, kind of all of these things started coming together, and then that was when we really sat down. I called Dave Ramsey's line. I talked to one of their counselors. We sat down and looked at it, and they laid out, if you just pay this off and then take the money that you were using for that and put it into this, and then take the money and use it, put it into that. And if you can just do that and keep putting that money away, keep shrinking what you're spending and increase how much you're paying off on these cards, they laid out and they made the, I think they made, so you can be out of debt within a year. Yeah. And it blew my socks off to think, yeah, I mean, in my mind, this was going to be like a 15-year thing to do this. And she laid it out on paper, and I thought, this makes so much sense. And so we began following some of those things. You know, I'm making this go way too long, Paul. But, we saved up the how much does he recommend again? How much does Ramsey recommend to save up?
Well, so he's got two levels of an emergency fund. Number one, his starter emergency fund is $1,000.
That's
and
what it
folks,
was.
The emergency fund, what that's for is so that you don't have to jump back on those credit cards again. That emergency fund will let you take care of if you got, you know, let's say you have a tire blowout, or if you get your refrigerator go out or something like that. You know, that lets you get and take care of those unexpected things like that without having to go back in and say, well, I don't have the money for it, but I got to do it, so I'm going to swipe it on a credit card.
Yeah. And then what was level two? We built that up. What's level two? How much was that?
So we're going in the baby steps here. So okay. Level one is the $1,000 emergency fund.
That's right.
Baby step two, which is what you're talking about, is where you pay off all your debts, you know, everything except your mortgage, baby step two. Baby step three is where you fully fund your emergency fund. Mm-hmm. That's where you take it to a level that's 3 to 6 months of your household expenses. So that way you get a big emergency fund so that, you know, let's say the AC for the house goes out,
right,
or, you know, it's time to replace a roof or something like that. You know, those kind of things can be covered by that bigger emergency fund.
You know, and I tell you, I almost dismissed that, Paul, because in my mindset, I thought, I'm never really going to need this. I'm an incredible worker. I'm not going to lose my job. I'm in a high demand field. And I said all that, but I went ahead and followed it because I said, you know what, we're going to stick to this. And we saved all that up. Well, little did I know, I had started this podcast while I was working for a social working company. The place that I was working for came to me and said, listen, your podcast is completely a conflict of interest. And they allowed me to quote unquote resign. But I mean, it was them firing me because of it.
Yeah.
And we actually had to have that. And let me tell you, that was exactly how long it took for us to find the next job.
Sure.
And so I highly encourage people, if you're thinking about doing this, follow those steps, because that, I mean, it would have been a whole lot worse if we hadn't paid attention to those two steps right there and then that happening.
You make a great point there, Trey. You know, it puts you in a situation, and it would with other folks too. If you can have that cushion of 3 to 6 months of your household expenses sitting there, and if you lost a job tomorrow, how cool would it be to actually look for a job that fits you rather than have to take the next thing just because you're going to have to put groceries on the table next week and just take something that's substandard, you really don't want to be doing, but you're just having to do it just because you got obligations to meet. But if you got this cushion here between you and the realities of life, then you can be more intentional about that search there. So that's spot on.
You know, and it was such an interesting experience because I told myself in my mind, I mean, I'm a hard worker. I love doing – I'm great with people. I mean, I am quite literally – I've been in the field that I needed to be until I found something that was better for me, which was podcasting. I mean, I knew I was in the right field, you know. And so I told myself, I just don't think I'm going to need this. I'm going to tell you guys, do it anyway, because you just don't know, especially if you just want to look at the instability of the economy right now. This is one of those things that you know, I thank God for it, but I also thank Ramsey for pushing these plans out there because it was excellent. So anyway, wrapping up the story here. I'm taking this way too long, but we started practicing this. We started paying off what we could. Anytime we got a tax return in, if we had any that we could do, we paid into that. When we got spare money in for different kinds of things, we put it down. And I'm going to tell you that as of last month, we officially have moved ourselves to debt free. And I was talking with a lady about it earlier today, and we were just kind of sharing our stories. And I tell you, and Paul, you understand this just as much as I do, but it is a level of freedom, that I could not begin to express. You know, there's a scripture on it. For any of you guys that believe in the Christian Bible like I do, there's a scripture on it that says that the debtor is slave to the lender.
Absolutely.
And I didn't realize how much there is even a psychological thing to that. And once we paid that last one off and we sent it off and we had already closed them out and we got done with those balances, I mean, I'm telling you, it was literally like a physical weight was lifted off of us. It is so crazy how that works.
Yeah, it is, Trey. I tell you, and you mentioned that scripture reference there. That is actually in Proverbs 22:7, which reads as, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender."
Yeah, that's good.
What a lot of people don't realize, if you back up one verse, And this is where it gets into the parenting hook and where I think this is a real neat discussion. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. I don't think it's actually coincidence that the next verse had to do with borrowers and slaves and lenders and
debt
and things like that. You know, so that's one of the things, parents, that you need to be teaching your kids is how to handle money. And just like Trey talked about, I was the same way. I didn't get any real training from my parents either. They told me the same thing. You need to open a checking account, but I didn't know anything about budgeting from them. I didn't know anything about how to handle money, how to open credit cards, how to treat credit, how to do anything like that. And I had to learn the same way from the School of Hard Knocks. And you know, I bounced a check or two along the way. And, you know, I had to figure out that, you know, there actually had to be money in that account before I could actually write a check. You know, it doesn't work the other way around. So, but you're right, Trey. That's a very good point. What was the toughest thing for you guys as you went through this journey?
You know, I think we had – it wasn't really even the lack of buying stuff. I mean, like I said, I'm a gifts guy, but it wasn't the lack, like having to slow down on the gifts or those kinds of things. I think the hardest part was that once you took those credit cards out of our lives, we bumped down, at least for our mindset, we bumped down in what our mindset was, a complete and total socioeconomic status. You know, we went from feeling like we were middle class to realizing that we were, I mean, by American standards, which is totally different from Africa, for instance, but by American standards, we were poor.
Yeah.
But those credit cards allowed us that extra however many credit line per year that allowed us to feel like we were in this category with our other friends who were living like this, which I now realize, guess what? They're all up to their eyeballs
the same
in
way.
Debt.
That's exactly right. They're doing, they're financing it the same way.
Exactly. For the first time that we all of a sudden realized we can't afford that. We can't go do those things. We can't keep buying these clothes here. We can't keep getting work clothes from JCPenney. I mean, and that was the hardest part for us, was all of a sudden realizing, man, we are dirt poor.
Yeah. Hey, has that happened? Did you get grief from your friends, or were people asking you to do things like go out and eat or things like that, and you had to say no to them? How did that work?
I would say that more than anything, Paul, we got defensiveness from people. Because we would say, we're doing this, or we're cutting back in this, so I can't do it. And I felt like that I either got shunned, or I felt like if I started talking with him about it, they got defensive with me.
Wow. You know,
I personally think it's because there was a level of conviction going on there. I think because they were all of a sudden asking, and I get this when I teach this parenting stuff too, but I think they were all of a sudden asking themselves, should I be doing this? I don't like the idea of doing that. I like the idea. Exactly. And that's what I noticed more than anything. And they weren't hateful about it. But let me tell you, when that conversation came up, whenever I told them that we had only decided we're going to go out to eat as a family once this month, and we weren't going to be able to go with him. I mean, I see your classic little devils just sitting on your shoulder. Just, oh, come on.
You got to eat anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I noticed. So I want to ask you a question. What did you guys do to economize? I love asking people this question.
You know, I'll tell you something, Trey, and this is just something that we've just always run kind of on the frugal side of things. My wife is very good about that. God bless her soul. She you know, her favorite line is, I hate to shop. And that is no sweeter words can
beautiful
be heard from
words.
A woman. Let me tell you that. but I'll tell you something here. I told you guys last week that I was divorced, and when we got together and got married, she actually came into the marriage without any debt, which was great. I came into the marriage with all I really had. I'd been trying to live this for a while. All I really had was an outstanding vehicle loan, and we sold that vehicle very early on and, you know, downsized it with another one. And so we have been to the point of, you know, not counting our mortgage for – as long as we've been married, you know, we really haven't had any of that consumer debt or anything like that.
That's so cool.
Later on down the road, at the end of 2005, by being in that position, we were able to take all that money you're talking about, kind of the debt snowball philosophy, and that we would have been paying on debt and so forth, and we got to a point where we were able to pay off our mortgage
by
that time.
Awesome.
So it's been a while that we have not owed anything except your regular monthly bills to people. But I'll tell you this, Trey, it's funny. Dave Ramsey espouses the envelope system, where you use the envelopes to set aside a portion of money in cash each month, each payday, to take care of these expenses that can get out of control. Things like groceries, things like eating out, things like entertainment, things like clothing, stuff like that. Stuff that you can get out and see, well, this shirt's on sale, you know, or this you know, I got to do something for the kids. They're, you know, growing out of their shoes. You know, we're just going to go buy this because there's a good sale here on today. You know, we still use the envelope system to this day. And my wife's got three envelopes at home now for eating out, for entertainment, and for clothing. And every time we make a purchase out of that, out of one of those categories, we use the cash out of the envelope to do that. Something else we do, we got rid of our home phone, at least our basic landline a couple of years ago. We were with Bell South here. They're now AT&T. We cut that cable a couple of years ago and went to Vonage at the time, which, you know, got you to a, I think it was $25 a month for, you know, unlimited calling in the U.S. So we really eliminated the long distance charge at that point in time, which was cool. But something even cooler, we just switched just this month. We switched off of Vonage to a system called Ooma, O-O-M-A, Ooma.com.
I've heard of that.
That is another voice over IP service.
Yeah.
So the way that works is that we have our internet coming in the house over our cable feed through Charter. And that plugs in to this little box, this Ooma box, and it is what they call a voice gateway, a residential voice gateway. And you can plug your regular phones in the house into this device, and the only thing I pay now for phone, you pay for the device one time, and I think it was $139. I actually found it on sale on one of the online sites. I think it was Woot or something like that. Paid $139 for the device, and the only thing we pay now is the taxes, you know, the regulatory fees.
Yeah.
One fees, things like that come across. Ooma takes care of that, and they'll bill that up to us. And I think my taxes wind up being about $6 every 2 months or every 3 months.
That's crazy. So, how does it work? Does it work pretty well?
It works great.
Interesting.
You know, and the funny thing is that, you know, not only we have cell phones, and we could have cut the cable, you know, and cut the home phone completely, except for a couple different things. Number one, I got a 9-year-old daughter. She doesn't have a cell phone yet, but she likes to talk to her meemaw, so she will pick up that phone and she can call her, you know, her meemaw for free. They're out of town, but it's, you know, no long distance cost or anything like that. But more importantly, my wife's a realtor, and she works out of her house a lot, and we have a fax machine in the house. And this Ooma device, you have to do a little bit of tinkering with it in the setting up of your fax machine, but it actually serves as the fax line as well when she needs to send or receive faxes. So we've kept it around just for that. If we were both, you know, if she was not in real estate and we were more, you know, conventional workers like I am during the day, go into the office and do that sort of work, you know, we probably wouldn't even have it at all. But for, you know, going from the price of, you know, $25 plus long distance a month down to $25 and no long distance, now down to nothing but the taxes, you know, we just keep looking. You know, and back to your original question, we keep looking for the deals.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as something comes up, you know, I try to get a little bit longer term deal when I'm hooked up with Charter here. So we go and we figure out, all right, my contract is up with them. You know, we'll set a 2-year commitment so the price doesn't change or anything. As soon as that happens, we're calling them again, asking them, what's the current deal? What can you do for me?
Yeah.
We don't let it default back to the normal rate. Something else we do, you had talked about economizing. A lot of folks are too prideful to do something like this or too busy to pay attention to it. Coupons.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't people use coupons more, Trey?
Yeah.
You know, we go in when we go eat out or something like that, you know, we'll look for a buy one, get one deal.
Yeah.
A coupon or something there. And when you got kids, that adds up very quickly. So there's just little things that we do back and forth. You know, we'll you know, I drive a truck. My wife drives a car. You know, if we're taking a little bit longer trip or something like that, we'll drive the car to save a few bucks on the gas mileage. It's just little things like that that, you know, over time really do wind up adding up.
You know, our best friend has become, like, especially when it comes to, like, clothing and stuff, is Goodwill. Like, I mean, I don't know. I guess I had some kind of stick with it. Only poor people go there. And in reality, we were poor. But, you know, we started going and frequenting there. And I started realizing I can dress in Ralph Lauren and nice like really nice clothes through there. And it's like I could find a, like a Ralph Lauren nice button up shirt, you know, with it look sharp with a tie and nice dress shoes, and I can get them for $2 to $5 maximum a piece, you know. And that was some of the things that we started doing is just where do we go get our clothes and shoes from, and just, you know, giving up on this idea. And then in reality, we get the same exact thing, but we just get it for 1/18th of the price.
Yeah, we go to the secondhand store too. In fact, on Friday, we got back in town on Thursday last week, and on Friday, I took that day off as well. Took my 17-year-old, and I don't know if you guys have them out there in Texas, but a little chain around here called Plato's Closet, and that is a secondhand store that is primarily geared toward teens. And so there's a lot of very trendy clothes in there, things like that. They do the same thing. You wind up getting it for, you know, 80-90% off of the, you know, of the shelf price. And we went in there and got him, you know, a couple pair of jeans, a pair of shorts, and I think one or two other things. And our bill out of there was $47.
Oh,
and,
man.
You can't buy a pair of jeans really today for $47.
So that's the same, same thing.
So we do the same thing. You know, my son doesn't care. He gets a great choice going into some place like that, as opposed to, okay, you just have, you know, here's your budget and this is all we can, you know, this is all you're going to be able to spend on jeans, and, you know, having to settle for something else. And we go in there and mix and match and things like that. So even that way, and I'm telling you, folks, we are 6 years plus the other side of the debt freedom thing, total debt freedom, and we are still doing this. And there's just no reason to let up or give up. You know, we're still trying to, you know, make the best use of what the resources God puts in our hands.
So here's another question that you asked me. I thought it was a good question. What was the hardest part for you guys?
Because we came into it together, there really wasn't any, as far as paying off the debt goes, it was unique the way we were able to structure it as we were paying off our mortgage. And because my wife had just started working in real estate, and we were able to make it on what I was working in my commercial, you know, my normal job. And so as she got going in real estate, what we did was really take all of her income out of real estate, and that's what we paid on as extra to the mortgage each month. Okay, so really we took the hardest thing there, I guess, was, you know, except for paying just whatever expenses she needed in real estate, was realizing and just, you know, accepting the fact that, you know, even though she's making this money out of selling real estate, that, you know, it's not coming in and staying in the house. And it's just keeping that discipline, that mindset that, you know what, it's to a greater goal and it's to a greater good. And we just had to keep reminding ourselves of that, you know, that we're okay with the things that we have today. We do have, you know, some money in reserves if we do need to replace something. But right now, that we're just going to stay the course and stay on this task of using her, you know, using her income to pay off the mortgage, and having that discipline and having those discussions, you know, all the time. It just really paid off.
You know, I was thinking about it when you first submitted this question to me. I was thinking about what's the last part. And so I also want to tell people, what am I doing is kind of like, where am I right now? And that was kind of the question that you were answering. And actually, I think you'll probably agree with me on what y'all are doing as well. But the last thing that I'm doing is, and the Ramsey model is one of two things is, you know, first off, decrease spending. And then increase revenue, increase what you're bringing in. So the other thing that I started doing was for the first time ever, I started thinking, how can I take my skills, my talents, my things that I'm good? You've mentioned too that you read Gary Vaynerchuk's Crush It. I read that book. If you guys haven't read that, to all the listeners out there, go read that book. But I began to also take, what are my skills? What are my personality? What are my passions? Which of course is parenting and talking about family stuff. And so I began to assemble and build also a business around my passions. Instead of taking me and trying to slam me into a role that you know, I can do but isn't my passion, instead I created a job around who I am and what I'm doing and building that up. Unless you ask President Obama, I'm sorry, I don't know what any of you guys think about President Obama, but unless you're him, and he would tell you that, no, Trey, you did not build that building. Other people did it before you. So did you see that? Did you see that speech?
I did not see that speech.
Oh, you'll have to go YouTube search Obama on small business. Just go do it and get the CNN feed. And he made the exact phrases that if you have a small business, you didn't build that business. It was the people that came before you. So, for instance, because the, you know, things like the government helped you build the internet, that, you know, that's why you have your business. It's not because you did hard work or you had the idea or capitalized on the – anyway. Yeah, I'm not. I'm not trying to influence anybody's political decision here, but
yeah, me neither. But I think the listeners probably get the idea how we feel on that. So
so anyway, we go listen to that. It was just one of those really.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no, you make a really good point there. You know, part of the process is, you know, there's two sides of the equation. There's the income and the outgo. You know, and one of the things that I've one of my favorite quotes is, you know, Zig Ziglar's got these great pithy little one-liner quotes. You know, and I think one of the things I heard from him one time was that if your outgo exceeds your income, then your upkeep will be your downfall. And that's just hilarious to me. You know, but it's true. You know, and you can only do, you know, two things. You can either decrease the outgo or you can increase the income side. So many people, and we see it in corporate America today too, Trey, when a company's having problems and when they're faced with some of these tough decisions, what do? They go to cut. They go to look for cutting people. They go for cutting services. They go for cutting, you know, expenditures as much as they need to do. And I applaud companies for doing that. They do need to look at that side of the equation. But in my mind, that's the easy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the hard stuff is to go out there and generate more revenue, to go into uncharted waters and to actually find someplace, hey, you know, here's a place here where we might could actually turn over some more money and not have to lay off 10 people. Same thing can happen in your household, folks. You can look there and say, well, I just don't make enough money to do this. Well, why not? You know, go do something. Figure out what you like to do. And there are so many tools, just like Trey's mentioned. You got the internet, you got a laptop or a PC in your house. And you have the world at your fingertips. And just what we're doing here, this is our little version of electronic tin cans and string. You know, we're recording a podcast here. I'm sitting in my truck at lunchtime at work here, and Trey's at lunchtime wherever he's working at right now. And it just works, you know.
Yeah.
And I could be sitting aside, you know, yucking with my friends inside here. But I'm trying to do the same thing, trying to get to the point where we can be free. We can be independent. We can do things we really love and really are passionate about, as opposed to being, you know, really a slave to what, you know, what conventional wisdom says we should be.
You know, I love that too. You said you've read Crush It, right, Paul?
Yes.
Well, I highly recommend everybody go pick up that book. It's Gary Vaynerchuk. I'll put a link to
short
it.
Write
it down.
Yep.
Yeah, very short, easy to read. And, yes. and he's one of the primary people who, fired me up into starting my own business in my own mindset with my own personalities and, yep. and realizing it's within my reach. It's so easy. And so I encourage anybody to go read that. I'll put a link to it in the show notes to today. That will be an affiliate link through Family Podcast Network. If you do click on that through Amazon, you buy that. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but it will credit me a little bit of money if you do buy that. But I highly recommend that book. You can get it on an ebook copy as well and read it on your iDevice or Nook or whatever else. It's awesome. So highly recommend checking that out. So my summarization, we both need to summarize. Summarization, I think that's a word. Summarization for this conversation is I recommend everybody, if you don't get anything from what I said today, on my side of it, I recommend these three things. Ask yourself those three questions. Number one, do I need it? Need it. I'm not saying do I want it. I'm not saying could it make my life better. iPhones are great and they can make my life better. Do I need it? When you're getting yourself out of debt, do you need it?
Right.
Number one. Number two, is there anything else in my life that could perform the function of that iPhone or whatever else if I didn't buy it? I'm going to be, more often than not, if I can somehow get around number one and justify anything in my mind, I can't get around number two. Because if I really look around, that old busted up laptop that looks like Optimus frickin' Prime sitting in, you know, in my, that thing may be no, I mean, that's like carrying a PC around in my lap. But you know what? It works and I can make that function if I need to.
Sure.
And then the last, and then if I can get around one or two, more often than not, I can't get around that third one. Can I pay for it right now in cash?
Yep. That's good. Yeah. I'll tell you what, my summary here, and I think you started hit on a little bit, and I'm not sure we did a lot of really good justice on it here. So number one is to be intentional.
I love that.
Where your money's going. It's where possible, convert to handling and using cash and not carrying a credit card, because it's been psychologically proven. You know, people spend more when they swipe with plastic. It's just not a painful ouchie moment as it is when Uncle Ben Franklin slips out of your fingertips,
you know.
Number two, I would say, is that as part of that intentionality, you and your spouse need to be talking about this.
Yes, love it.
You got to get on the same page here, because if you're pulling one direction, let's just say this, if you're trying to fill in the hole and your wife or your husband is digging out the bottom there, you know, you're making no progress at all, and you wonder where everything that you threw in the hole went. So that would be number two. And, you know, number three is get your kids on board. Let them see what you're doing. Talk to it with your kids and let them see why this is important to you guys. And, you know, make it a big hairy deal in your house, and let them see that, you know, when you're debt free, what the things are that, you know, will come the other side of things. It's not going to happen overnight. You didn't get there overnight, so you're not going to get out of it overnight. And don't fool yourself in thinking a consolidation home, you know, some kind of consolidation loan or home equity is cleaning the slate. All you're doing is moving debt at that time. Yep. It's going to take the hard work of just paying more than the minimums each month to get out of these holes that you're in.
And spending less. I want to tell a cool story on that, Paul. The other day, you know, Chris, we've started this, and we've been very, very open about talking to our kids about this. I mean, we've explained to our six-year-old the mistakes we made and spending too much money. We explained now how we've moved to a savings, you know, system. There's a rifle that I really, really, really want. Normally, what would I do? I'd go put on a credit card. Boom, got me a rifle, right? We stopped that, and I've started saving up for that. The other day, my daughter's birthday was in June, and so she got a whole bunch of money in for her birthday, and I thought for sure, and typical in all her old style, and modeling wise, guess what? It's exactly what Daddy always did too. She would take whatever she got in and she would spend it. Well, we started talking to her, being very upfront about the mistakes we made and the choices that we're making now. And I get a little choked up just thinking about it. But the other day I came in and she had this jar and it was all this rolls of money in there. And I said, Anna, what you going to buy with that? And she goes, nothing. I think I'm going to save it and buy something really big later.
Yeah.
And I mean,
that's just neat.
I got choked up at that, you know, and I began to realize she's listening.
She's
6 years old. She is getting it.
She's getting it. They're watching
your
parents.
I had to figure that out when I was 26. She is starting, and there's just that part of me that's so excited to see how she's going to turn out. You know, if she doesn't get into all this, she doesn't have to dig herself out of anything, because she's going to walk in. I mean, I fully expect my kids to have businesses ready to go. If it's blogs or whatever else, I expect them to have businesses before they walk out, at least knowing how to set one up, whether they go to college or not, and then not have that, and then seeing how that can start. So I encourage you, start your kids young, guys. Start them as young as they can physically understand what you're explaining to them. And even if they can't understand, start giving them the vernacular, the words, that idea of savings. Cash. I mean, get that in their heads early.
Yep, exactly. Well, I knew it, Trey. I knew we'd go long when we got on this subject, because it's something we're both very passionate about. The folks on the other end listening to this are probably thinking, wow, you know. But this is good stuff here, I tell you. So I think we're going to have to call it quits on the show here today, Trey. Any more words from you?
No, I am done. Take us out.
Well, very good. Well, folks, we appreciate you listening to us today here on the Real Family Guys podcast. You can find me, Paul McGuire, over at affluentstudent.com, and Trey is at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. We will post these up on every Friday, and we would love to hear from you, the listeners. So on each of our sites, off on the right-hand side, I see Trey has changed this too. There's a little icon there that has a little telephone on it. You can click that and you can call us there. You can leave us a voice message and let us know your question, your feedback, your comment. Tell us if we're doing a good job, if we're off the mark, or just something you might want to talk about here. And you can also find this podcast at both of our sites, over off on Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you normally get your podcast at. Just go take a look out there. Search for the Real Family Guys podcast, or on Trey's site at familypodcastnetwork.com, and download us there. We'd appreciate the feedback and any reviews you'd like to leave there as well. So with that, Trey, good talking to you today, my man, and we will speak to you next time here on the Real Family Guys podcast.
See you next week, guys.
All right.